Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hour number three here on a Thursday edition of the show. Stick to sports coming up at 8:45. We will also go behind enemy lines with Nate Taylor, who covers the Chiefs for The Athletic. Get a Kansas City perspective for the matchup Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. But right now, we welcome in our buddy Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Rex, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. I've been enjoying the show, guys. Nick, I actually really enjoyed your point about hating when people anoint people too quickly. I thought that was a good point. It made me think back to your tweet about Daniel Jones.
I never anointed that guy. Don't even go there, Rex. I would never do that. That is fake news, and you know it.
I think you said he's going to be better than Watson, Mahomes, Johnny United, right? I
mean, yes. Staubach, Marino, he's going to eclipse them all.
Sorry, man, I had to do it.
No, no.
So, Joe, is Jeffrey Simmons the greatest Tennessee Titan defensive lineman of all time or not?
Man, top two. Okay. But right. You know, we'll see if he can be number one.
So I don't know if you were listening to our Taylor Lewan conversation, but it feels like we've talked a lot about the quarterback. We've talked a lot about the offensive line as a whole, and we certainly have talked a lot about Arthur Smith and, you know, Derrick Henry, the receivers. We go on and on down the list, and it feels like, you know, with the way other players are talking about Taylor Lewan, that there needs to be a deeper conversation about is he. You know, he's great for this team and this organization from a personality standpoint. I don't think he's distracted by his brand and his media work outside of the locker room. I think that's overblown. But is he the leader that everybody thinks he is in the locker room? Does he make other people better around him?
Well, I think it's complicated with Taylor Lewan. I think the best way I've heard it from someone is, you know, he isn't for everyone, okay? So I think, you know, in some way, he is the most vocal guy, the most outwardly emotional guy. When he's playing well, you know, on the field, I think he's an inspirational player. And I agree with you, Braden, on the, you know, on the podcast and stuff like that. I do think that's overblown. I guess, you know, when you're on suspension, I would advise a guy like that to keep it more quiet maybe than he did, just because, you know, you're not helping your team. People are mad. Fans are mad. Probably some people in the organization are mad, even if they won't say it. So maybe be quiet then. But overall, yeah, I like the podcast, stuff like that. I mean, if another guy's out doing whatever, fishing or whatever with his free time, why do you care if this guy is doing a podcast? And I agree also with you that it is good for the Titans. They need to have more stuff like that. As far as leadership, he's never going to be a great leader for this team, because I think his personality does rub some people the wrong way. That's just how it is. I think some people really enjoy it and some don't. And at times, you know, obviously he loses control of his emotion. He can be immature, things like that. He's going to say wacky stuff. For us, he's the leader for the media. Like, he's the first guy you go find, because not just because he'll say, you know, off-the-wall quotes, but he will be honest, and he'll honestly assess himself and the team, and so that's appreciated, and it's not all that common. So I don't know if, you know, obviously I know some people have said some stuff about him, and it's, you know, I would agree with anyone who says he's not the leader or a great leader. The thing he has to do is he has to play like one of the best left tackles in the game, and I still think he is that.
Rex, last night Vanderbilt got their first win since New Year's Eve 2018, as the Jerry Stackhouse era got off to a good start. 18-point win against Southeast Missouri State. Well, yeah, I know you were there. What did you notice about Stackhouse, maybe from a coaching style perspective? Certainly, you know, Scottie Pippen Jr. is there. Naismith had a good game. What did you observe last night in the opener?
I got like 1,700 words coming up on this on theathletic.com. Should be dropping any minute. So I've got a lot of thoughts. But, you know, I think, you know, Stackhouse is, obviously I watched him a lot. And, you know, he's very, very reserved. You know, very, you know, not a lot of words during the game. Even, you know, not a lot of reactions. He did get ticked at one call, which was a really bad call, by Doug Shouse, who fights for every flop anyone ever does in college basketball. But anyway, you know, I'm trying, you know, of course you're always going to compare, you know, the new coach with the last coach, Bryce Drew. You know, eventually it was just like, please stop clapping. You know, like, this is bad. Yell at somebody, things like that. You know, Stackhouse isn't going to be one of those guys either. He's not going to be anything like Kevin Stallings, for example, for Vanderbilt fans, who, of course, would make that comparison. As far as what they were doing, I liked what they were doing offensively. I thought they ran a lot of good stuff. Defensively, you know, it's going to be a packed-in man defense. And there were some issues last night with some communication and just some really some guards getting blown by. I think it's really interesting that he's going with Saben Lee as the sixth man. Saben Lee is, you know, one of the two most talented players in the team, along with Aaron Nesmith. Those guys had 46 points last night, 25 for Nesmith, 21 for Lee off the bench. But I kind of like the idea of letting him watch a game a little bit. And, of course, they're going to have him off the ball more. He's a really intriguing player. He's as explosive as any guard in college basketball. He really is. He, of course, is not a great shooter, not a creator for others. And I think Pippen Jr. is going to be a nice addition. He's not going to blow anybody away with his talent, but he sees the floor well. He moves the ball around. You know, look, this team is – if this team sniffs 500, it's a good debut season for Stackhouse. You got to be realistic about it. But I do think they're going to be fun to watch. And Cleavon Brown, by the way, senior big man, really has worked on his body and his game. He's going to have a really good year.
Now, Rex, I think it's going to be very interesting to watch sort of the dynamic with the basketball and the football from this standpoint, because Malcolm Turner chose to make the change very early, going from Bryce Drew to Stackhouse. And why he made that change, I'm pretty sure he has his reasons. Maybe it was philosophy. Maybe he just wanted to see that team going in a different direction because Bryce had been there a few years. So he makes the change at the head coaching, basketball head coaching position. Now you have Derek Mason, who just got an extension, which I don't think is worth. It's not even worth the paper they printed his name on, I don't think, because things change. Do you think, looking at what Stackhouse potentially can do this season, will it be a direct if Stackhouse does well, do you think it then changes Malcolm Turner's mind about how he proceed with the head coach of the football team? Because if he hires Stackhouse, if Stackhouse does great, now he might say, you know what, I can do this. I can hire a football coach and get the same results that I got from Jerry Stackhouse.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Derek. Actually, you know, as media before the game yesterday, we're talking about, you know, the chances of Derek Mason keeping his job, and someone brought that point up, you know, that if the Stackhouse first season goes really well, does Turner, is he, I guess, more emboldened to make a change there? I don't know that I necessarily buy that there's a big correlation there. And, you know, look, when you fire a coach, as you know, in college sports, there is a buyout involved, there's money involved, you got to pay. And so that's going to be a factor here, too, with Derek Mason. You know, so I don't know. I don't know if there's any correlation there. I do think that, you know, Malcolm Turner, obviously, it's more of a comfort zone for him in basketball. He was in the G League. He knew Stackhouse well. You know, I think it's just natural that if you're, you know, around a sport all the time, as he was in the G League, you're probably more comfortable, you know, assessing it. And some of the aspects of this job as AD are completely brand new to him. That's a long way of saying I still have my doubts that he's going to fire Derek Mason after this season. Now, I also think it's an open book right now, and we have to see how Vanderbilt finishes. But I think anyone who would think that it's a done deal right now, I think that'd be a mistake to assume. And, you know, of course, I've talked to him about it some, and he's not saying much. But I just, you know, it's a big, big move, and I think he correctly assesses the situation as, you know, the football coach at Vanderbilt, whoever it is, needs a lot more support than football gets right now. You know, now I know Vanderbilt fans probably won't be excited if they have a 3-9 coach who comes back next season, but I still think that's possible.
Tennessee at Kentucky, huge game for both coaching staffs this weekend. All the quarterbacks have been cleared for Tennessee, but we still don't know what that means. Kentucky could have a wide receiver playing quarterback, which of course creates PTSD for Tennessee fans. What You know, what do you make of this game? Vegas line has shifted big time towards Tennessee from Kentucky to start. It's just a really bizarre situation.
Yeah, and a huge game. I mean, this could be like the game for the Gator Bowl or something, you know, which is crazy to think. But, I mean, we don't even know if Tennessee's going to be in a bowl game, but, like, they could be in a Florida, you know, New Year's Day or New Year's Day-ish game. And, obviously, this was, Braden, this was a huge win for Jeremy Pruitt last year. You know, you think back to Mississippi State. When he takes on one-dimensional offenses, you know, the Vols seem to do well. That aggressive defense seems to get the job done. So, yeah, it's a big game, and I really like Tennessee's chances in this game. Got to be a little bit more consistent with the run game. Kentucky, you know, plays well at home, good defensive team. And then the quarterback situation. I mean, you know, I guess you could also go Juwan Jennings Wildcat all night, but I think we'll see Brian Maurer. And, you know, I think he's a guy who should start if healthy. I also think that, you know, if he makes a freshman mistake or two, it won't be long before we see Jarrett Garantano. And I really like how he's responded to the benching and all the stuff that's happened to him this year. And I think he's in a better place. So with one of those two guys, I think Tennessee wins this game.
Rex, let me stay with Tennessee, but go back to hoops for just a second. Obviously, they got their season underway two nights ago and got a win. Guys like Bowden and Turner and Pons and Fulkerson, they're all back. But the upper echelon players, the Williams, the Schofields, you know, those type of players are all gone. What are your expectations for Rick Barnes this year? It feels like they're a fringe top 25 team, Kentucky and Florida getting all the love in the conference. What do you think their ceiling is this year?
Ceiling is probably Sweet 16, and you know, I think if they firmly get in the NCAA tournament and they don't have to sweat it out on Selection Sunday, I think Rick Barnes has done pretty well with this team. You know, the 7-footer from Arizona State, whose name I'm not even going to mess with, I've really botched it several times already. I really thought that waiver was going to come through. It didn't. And that hurts. I mean, that front court is completely rebuilt. I mean, I love John Fulkerson, you know, and he's going to run around and he's going to work his butt off. But they really are so different because they were so front court dominated before. But I think Josiah James, you know, he had a so-so debut. I think he's really going to be a nice point guard, get the ball to Turner and Bowden. And you mentioned Pons. That's a guy I just – kind of like Saban Lee, like one of the best athletes in college basketball. But, you know, the skill, can he be a better basketball player? Really nice 15.7 rebound debut. You know, that's a guy who I think can really make up some of that lost ground. Rick Barnes, we know he's a good coach. I think the Vols get in the tournament, and if they can scratch to the second weekend, that's a heck of a kind of a bridge year for Rick Barnes.
Rex, always a pleasure. Good stuff. We appreciate you stopping by. And when Danny Dimes goes to Canton, you're more than welcome to come along with me for the enshrinement ceremony.
All right, man.
All right.
Put it down. You just put it on tape.
You got it. You got it. Joe Rexroad joining us from The Athletic.
Yeah, we are anti-anointing here on the show. Mm-hmm. Just on Twitter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But don't forget, I did say, Danny Dimes will be a better quarterback than Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson.
Well, I hadn't started out that way.
Still plenty of time. It's very early.
It's not all the precincts have reported.
Correct.
So. I read a text, a poll saying when they had Bill Polian saying that Lamar Jackson should have switched when he was coming out. Maybe he should think about switching to wide receiver.
You think that's fuel for Lamar Jackson?
Oh, of course.
Well, he said it after the first game.
Mm-hmm. I said, yeah.
After they torched the Dolphins, he was like, pretty good for a receiver.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, there you go.
All right, we will stay with The Athletic at the bottom of the hour. We'll get a Chiefs perspective on Sunday's game against the Titans. But when we come back, speaking of the Chiefs, Andy Reid had one of the greatest jokes I've ever heard yesterday. Back after this on Morning Drive.
This is not a joke, people. Service announcement. What do they call it? Public service announcement
PSA.
To all men. PSA to all men out there. I know you're listening and you're driving slow because it's raining outside. This is what I'm going to tell you, and I've been telling you for the longest about my good friends over at Cool Springs MD. more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with that experienced staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. And yes, man, we need a better quality of life. Coos Rings MD services have already helped many men of the Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, which I'm in, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune system. Because, man, when we get sick, we act like big babies. So let's not get sick. Energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. I was, you know, I tell my story all the time. I was tired, and I thought it was because I was working out too much, getting up early in the morning, and then going to work out and yoga and all this other stuff. So I just, you know, I had to go see somebody because that's not me. After leaving Cool Springs MD, man, oh, man, I felt like a 25-year-old again. I looked 25, but I felt it, and that's even better. So check it out. They help you with your immune system, energy level, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And, yes, we need to have a healthier life because when we are healthy men, everyone else around us is happier. And there's no better time to achieve a healthier lifestyle. What are you waiting on, men? Give Cool Springs MD a call today. Make an appointment. Pull out your pencils, your paper, your smartphone. Write this down, you know, save the number, man, because you're going to need it. The older you get, the more you're going to need this number. Here it is, 615-486-3458, 615-486-3458. Don't be ashamed, man, because I wasn't ashamed. Things happen. We get older. But you know who can help you? Cool Springs MD. So go visit them. Make an appointment. Here's the website, coolspringsmd.com.
Little Young Fables here on a Thursday. This one goes out to superfan Derek Mason.
Got some pipes.
Looks like purple rain outside today. This weather stinks.
It's chubby rain outside.
Hey, keep my physical stature off the air.
Yeah, I never seen that movie.
No.
Eddie Murphy.
Why are you talking about your coast?
Eddie Murphy, and he said, and I forgot the name of the movie, but they're trying to get him. Eddie Murphy plays two parts in the movie. He plays this actor, then he plays this other
Bowfinger?
Guy. Yeah, Bowfinger.
Yeah.
And he said, at the end, they want him to say, Chubby Rain. Without him, you know, it's just, and he says at the end, Chubby Rain.
Jesus.
That's like Chubby Rain outside.
I used to be chubby. I had a couple year stretch where I was up to like 215.
It was raining outside every day?
Yeah, it felt like it was raining. It was raining fast food in my life. I was 5'9", 215. I was like a little stump.
I don't eat any fast food at all. What's my excuse right now?
I don't know.
Bourbon?
Yeah.
Maybe. Candy?
Yams.
I'm eating all my stupid kids' candy right now from Halloween. It's terrible. Get that thing out. I'm doing it for them because I don't want them to eat it, I need to get it out of the house.
Take the bullet for them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to eat all the candy for them to protect them because I think it's what a good parent would do.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So Nate Taylor covers the Chiefs for The Athletic. He'll join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get the Kansas City perspective of Sunday's matchup against the Titans. But former Eagles head coach and current Kansas City Chief head coach Andy Reid has always been a funny guy. He's got a sense of humor, and he said yesterday, I wish we had the audio, but we don't. I'll give you the direct quote. Andy Reid says the Tennessee Titans are a well-coached team. I mean, even Floyd Reese finds that comical. Now, I get it. You got to say all the right things. But I want to ask a real question here. D-Mace, what truly makes a good coach in the NFL? Is it X's and O's? Is it egos? Is it managing those egos? Is it the psychology of getting players up in certain spots? Like, what separates, I don't even want to say Belichick, because he's just a goat. Like, what separates Andy Reid as a head coach from somebody else, from Mike Vrabel?
I think it's all of the above that you just mentioned. But the good thing about Andy is that he's an exceptional play caller. He's probably one of the best, if not the best, that is coaching now as far as designing plays and finding the weak link and putting guys in a position to succeed. I've always said that's an offensive coordinator's job. put guys in a position to succeed, and Andy has been able to do that better than just about anybody. But not only that, I think a good coach has to be able to manage a bunch of egos and putting his ego aside. And, you know, I think that's what the great coaches are able to do. Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, Popovich, Krzyzewski, you know, guys like that that have been doing it for a long time. They're able to put their ego aside, and they're able to manage the other egos in the room. Now, it may be a little bit easier to do it at the college level, but when you get to the pros and everybody's, you know, making a lot of money, it's kind of hard to kind of taper those egos. And the great coaches find a way. They find a way to motivate guys. They find a way to get that extra even out of the great ones, whether it's, you know, with word or challenge, challenging that great player to do even more or to be more of a leader. They do it in subtle ways. The great coaches do it in subtle ways. They don't say a lot, but they know when to push buttons, and they know when not to. They know when to say something, and they know when not to. They are just great CEOs of the team, and they don't try to, you know, even though I think Bill does, they don't try to micromanage. They trust the people. They trust the people that they hire. I think Andy trusts everybody that he hires. I think Belichick to a degree trusts the people that he hires now better than probably he did 10 years ago.
I imagine it's really hard for these egomaniacal, you know, type A paranoid schizophrenic people that you sort of have to be a head coach in the NFL or college football. It's got to be impossible to be a let your people do their jobs and also attention to detail. Like that's got to be a really tough balance because you only get a head coaching job because you've probably grinded your way through, you know, years of making no money as a graduate assistant, and then you become a coordinator, then you become a position coach or whatever, and you have, you know, by the time you get a head coaching job, the level of detail you have to live by every single practice, every single day is so extraordinary that I imagine trying then to let it go the way Dabo Swinney does, for example, at Clemson, a little bit more than maybe Nick Saban does at Alabama or Bill Belichick, that's got to be ridiculously difficult. And Andy Reid is just one of those guys who has an edge as an X's and O's guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, talking to Mike Fisher last night on Smashville Live, one of the things he talked about with Peter Laviolette is he's a great storyteller. And when you can sort of create this motivational moment through telling a story, and what Mike Fisher said he responded to and the type of leader he wanted to be, which is all about communication and unity and connectivity and trust, right? Like if I believe that the coach has my best interest at heart, I'm going to play harder for that guy or that girl. And so I think, you know, there's different styles of leadership, but I think Vrabel probably has a lot of those qualities because of his time at New England and the type of person. Like he's like the typical coach. Like he's the guy who didn't really get drafted highly, wasn't, you know, a highly recruited player. You know, yeah, sure, he went to Ohio State, but sort of made his way on his own as a player. That strikes me as a good quality to have as a coach, a guy who's just going to outwork the other guy.
Like, let's remove Andy Reid real quick. Let's just go with three guys that are either in their first or second year. Two different scenarios. One, they all come walking into interview for the job with a GM and an owner. And two, the first day they're in the locker room and how they command, how their presence is. Let's go Vrabel, Freddie Kitchens, Matt LaFleur. Like when those three guys walk into a room, I just feel like, and I think maybe LaFleur might end up being a better coach, but I think Vrabel commands a room better than LaFleur and Kitchens.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I think LaFleur's advantage is more in the X's and O's side of things, where Vrabel's had 1 year as a coordinator, mm-hmm. and they were 32nd in the NFL in defense. So I think he can teach technique extremely well. I think if you know, look at how Harold Landry has developed. Right,
well, he's very hands-on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Harold Landry's developed in a really big way. The linebacking core in the front seven is really good, and that's sort of his baby, right? That's his area of expertise. The way Saban is hands-on with the secondary, right, at Alabama. Again, I think it's about you got it, Derek. It's about psychology now. It's just like any great manager of people in any job, in any walk mm-hmm. of life. How do you push and pull levers and buttons to get people to go above and beyond what they're capable of doing in a critical situation? And in sports, it's this physical thing, right? It's this physical you know, task that you have in front of you. Sure, there's a lot of mental, but you know, the sales rep that's getting motivated by the sales manager is not going to go out there and like get his brains beaten in, you know, like the way you do in a football field or a hockey rink. So I think it's about the psychology of it all, and how do you trigger people, and knowing what triggers people in a positive way to make them be better at what they are. And that's, man, that's why I can't do it. I don't know what the hell people.
I think the hardest thing in sports, especially when you're dealing with, you know, those with those sports that have truly a physical nature to it, hockey, football, even boxing to an extent. Boxing is all physical. To be able to, in that moment, to be able to keep your cool as a head coach, because there's a lot of testosterone being thrown around, a lot of egos, you know, being able to manage a guy yelling on the sideline because of a call, and being able to kind of block it out and talk sensible and calm to a ref or to that player that is going off. That takes a lot of skill, because you're sort of the calm in the storm. You have to be the calm in the storm. Now, you're going to see coaches blow up every once in a while. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you've seen Belichick blow up. We've seen...
Just got to know when to do it.
You know, Saban blow up. And it happens. Pop, he's blown up. But for the most part, these guys are the calm amongst the storm. And, you know, great coaches find a way to kind of, you know, have that balance of, you know, I know everybody else around me is yelling and screaming, but I have to be the one that's always focused. And I think great coaches, they realize that, and along with their other great attributes.
Speaking of great coaches, some breaking news according to NJ.com, which is in New Jersey. Butch Jones has removed his name from consideration for the Rutgers job. So, you know, Rutgers stinks when Butch is like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't think Butch was a candidate.
He's better off staying in Alabama.
Live that buyout life, baby.
Live that buyout life.
I'd rather wash cars than the coach Rutgers. So. Yeah. Butch Jones is in good shape.
Brutal. Exactly. Nate Taylor covers the Chiefs. He works for The Athletic. We'll talk to him coming up next here on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, the Titans and the Chiefs, coming up Sunday at Nissan Stadium, could very well be the last stand for the Tennessee Titans in many regards, with playoff dreams this year, and it could be coming at the worst possible time if Patrick Mahomes is in fact ready to go. So let's get some details. Let's find out. Nate Taylor covers the Chiefs for The Athletic, and he's with us here on Morning Drive. Nate, how you doing this morning?
Doing well. How are you, fellas?
We're doing well. So what can you tell us? What are the latest details on Patrick Mahomes and his health?
Yeah, so here's the biggest thing that occurred yesterday. Patrick Mahomes was a full participant in practice, and that is the first time that that has occurred since he had his dislocated kneecap injury in that Thursday night game against the Denver Broncos back on October 17th. So it's trending more and more like Mahomes will play on Sunday against the Titans. He took the majority of the reps with the first-team offense in place of Matt Moore, who's really played admirably since Mahomes' injury occurred. But I think Mahomes is determined, and he's pretty much circled this date on the calendar to come back, with the idea that the Chiefs did win two of the last three games without him, mostly on the field. And so now he feels that it's his responsibility to come back and sort of lead the team to where they hope to be, which is one of the teams that can really make a run deep in the playoffs.
Where is this team at defensively? I think everybody points to the Colts matchup and says, hey, here's the blueprint on how you attack Kansas City. Has this defense evolved at all? I know it's totally different personnel-wise this year than it was last year, but how has the defense evolved over the course of the year?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because one of the things that statistically that we've been able to see over the last month or so is that the defense is actually starting to understand and execute Steve Spagnuolo's system. They went from a 3-4 under Bob Sutton to a 4-3 with Spagnuolo, and there are roughly half of the starters are new, with Frank Clark, Bashaud Breeland is in the backfield. They've got Tyrann Mathieu, who's played excellent this year, along with Juan Thornhill, who's a rookie free safety. And if you look at the DVOA statistics, this team was pretty atrocious at defending the run, which is what occurred in their loss to the Colts and then was sort of repeated against the Texans. But since that game, these last 3 to 4 weeks, the defense has actually gotten better in terms of stopping the run. And all of a sudden, the Chiefs have what appears to be an above-average secondary. Juan Thornhill and Tyrann Mathieu do not give up deep passes, and the cornerbacks are tough and physically capable of at least keeping guys below their season averages, which is what occurred last week with Stephon Diggs for the Minnesota Vikings only having one reception for 4 yards. I mean, it was very impressive given the circumstances that the defense has tried to at least be more competent or at least be on par with the Chiefs' sort of electric offense. If the defense gets more turnovers, that's probably the last step for this team to really be, you know, a top 10 defense in the league. But statistically, they are trending from towards the middle of the pack, getting closer to that 9, 10, 11 range. And so if you're the Tennessee Titans, there's less holes in this Chiefs defense than in weeks 2, 3, and 4.
Nate, what's the fan base's reaction right now to Andy Reid? Because I'm from Philadelphia. I lived the Andy Reid era as a fan, and then I lived it as a media member for the last 3 or 4 years before they went to Chip Kelly. And the whole thing on Andy Reid is, you know, you give him a bye week, he's great. He's going to score points. He's going to win games. He's going to win divisions. He's going to make runs in the playoff. But we know what has eluded Andy Reid. He's been really good in Kansas City. But are fans at the point now where they're saying he's got to win a championship, or are they just happy being what they are?
It's a little bit of a mix of both. But this was the year where everyone sort of said, okay, you know, we are truly Super Bowl contenders. You can say it, and it really means something. And, you know, much of this offseason was about can Andy Reid get the right people in place, get the right players, can Brett Veach, his general manager, find the right pieces to make the defense whole, right? Because we know the offense is historic. And once you know Patrick Mahomes is as good as he has been, and I would even say for Titans fans, like, yes, Patrick Mahomes will be limited when he returns or if he returns Sunday in Nissan Stadium. The idea is that he'll wear a heavy brace on his right knee. He did have a left ankle sprain that he sort of played with throughout the majority of the season before the dislocated kneecap. So he's not going to be that scrambling, you know, mobile guy out of the pocket, but he's still incredibly accurate. So when you have a quarterback that's better than half the league when he's injured, it gives you confidence that this team, if they could just make the necessary steps, be a team to really go after the New England Patriots. I think the fans here in Kansas City believe at some point Tom Brady's got to get old, right? At some point Bill Belichick and his reign in the AFC will have to go by the wayside, and the Chiefs are just one of these teams that really hope that they can fill that void and be the new dominant team in the AFC. A lot of that comes down to having a great coach in Andy Reid and having an even better quarterback than probably anybody else has moving forward with Patrick Mahomes when he's fully healthy.
Now, you have six guys on this team with 20 or more receptions. That tells me that the ball is getting spread around. You know, to everybody. It's not just one guy you got to key on, even though I believe Travis Kelce is probably their most consistent weapon. Tyreek Hill is probably their most explosive weapon. Are we watching arguably one of the best offenses or collection of offensive players together that we've seen in the last 10, 15 years with this Kansas City Chiefs team?
Yeah, there's an argument to be made, and I wrote a story about this last year when the team was, again, they averaged 35.3 points a game, which, like, nobody does in the NFL. And a lot of it is because you have sort of a pick-your-poison aspect with the Chiefs offense. And I will say this. People kind of forget that Sammy Watkins is on the team, and that's, like, somewhat frightening and terrifying because when he's healthy, everybody knows how talented he is. And he's sort of this barometer as to, like, when Sammy Watkins plays, the Chiefs, you know, it sort of equates out that the Chiefs usually win because that frees up space for Travis Kelce, who I agree is the most consistent guy, the best tight end in the AFC. And Tyreek Hill, there's just nothing to defend it. So if the offensive line gives either quarterback time, whether it's Matt Moore on Sunday or who we assume it will be Patrick Mahomes, I just don't know what the Titans can do outside of double-teaming Tyreek Hill every play, but that obviously gives you a disadvantage against some of the other skill position players. And there's guys like Byron Pringle who you've just started to blossom on the scene that they sort of found as an undrafted free agent a couple years ago. McCole Hardman is their speedy receiver That's a rookie this season. He scored 4 touchdowns already in 9 games, which is very impressive given he's just still learning the wide receiver position. And then because of everything that we've seen so far, as long as the team stays healthy, which has been probably the biggest issue all year, the Chiefs are going to score points. It's just a matter of can the opposing team play well in the red zone and can they get a turnover or two that switches the tide back in their favor. I think those are the two things that the Titans defense really needs to focus on is you are going to give up chunk plays. This offense is sort of predicated on that, but can you buckle down in the red zone and can you get a turnover or two that sort of swings momentum in your favor?
Nate, always a pleasure. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, fellas. I appreciate it.
Nate Taylor covers the Chiefs for The Athletic. He alludes to the red zone. Feels like the Chiefs are in the red zone pretty much every drive. I saw this from Field Yates yesterday. He tweeted out the highest percentage of team red zone trips that have resulted in a touchdown this season. The number one team is the Bills at 71.4%.
Hmm.
Number two is the Titans at 69.8%.
Nice.
The only problem is the Titans have probably only been to the red zone, what, 10 times this year? Great percentage, but we don't get there too often.
We can look that up.
It hadn't been a whole lot. I mean,
Arthur Smith, we don't get to the red zone often, but when we do, we punch it in.
We score touchdowns.
And ultimately, that's what you want to do, but you just want to get in the red zone more often.
Yep.
Teams like Kansas City and some other high-scoring teams, a lot of times they're scoring outside of the red zone. And when they do get in the red zone, whether it's a field goal or a touchdown, they're getting points. But I think Kansas City does a lot of their damage outside of the red zone.
Doesn't Tyreek Hill have almost a record for 40-yard plus touchdowns? Doesn't he have the record already?
Yeah, he's up there for sure.
Yeah. They have speed just across the board.
Yeah. You got the stat?
I'm looking it up.
All right, we'll get it on the other side.
No, I got it right
here. You got it?
I got it right here. Let's see. Tennessee Titans, 25th in the NFL, 23 trips to the red zone.
23.
However, that's better than the Bills, who are leading the NFL in percentage.
Mm.
So 23 trips is better than the Jets. Oh, my computer just went all malware on me there, like literally in the middle of looking at this.
That's what happens when you bring up the Jets.
Yeah.
Your computer saw a ghost.
You mentioned the Jets, and your computer's like, nope,
yep.
Not doing it.
Don't want to talk about that.
Braden's MacBook got mono.
Dolphins.
Oh, wow.
Dolphins, Redskins, Jets, and then the computer crashes.
There you go. Stick to sports. That's coming up next, assuming we don't crash. Every time I hear this song, I just think of Rush Hour.
I knew it.
Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker.
I knew that's exactly what you were going to go to.
I'm a loser, so you know.
I think if happiness could be put into musical form, it would sound like this.
Yes. It's good stuff. Andrew Marinus, top of the hour. Hal Gill, 9:30, right now. STS.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
Basically.
And stick to sports. Now, on Morning Drive.
All right, Ocho Cinco, what do you got?
Stick to Sports is brought to you by Decorated Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorated Den when you're ready to decorate your home, office, and outdoor spaces. Request a complimentary appointment online at decoratedden.com.
Number one.
I actually did it right this time today. It wasn't backwards like it was yesterday.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. So, now, I talked about when my family came into town and my uncle was drinking my Jim Beam. There you go, sweetheart. So, basically, now I want to ask
you
guys.
You're such an idiot.
I want to ask you the rules on the BYOB. BYOB. Basically, bring your own beer, bring your own alcohol, whatever. Because there was
bring your own babe,
bring your own babe, bring your own babe. Because you can't go stealing mine.
PG, that's the PG version. D-May's cleaned that up.
If you're going to a house party, I think the whole point is to go meet them there.
Yeah. But not really. I mean, you could bring a significant other to a house party,
of course.
Yeah. So
if you have a significant other, I wouldn't recommend going to meet other people.
Why not?
That's Marquise Munson, everybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, show her nice things. But anyway, so basically, there was a situation over the weekend about a bottle. And it's basically, it's a BYOB party. So this person brought their own bottle of Jack Daniels. And someone else was drinking that bottle of Jack Daniels. So basically, is that person in the wrong if someone drinks that Jack Daniels, knowing that it's BYOB, and that person was drinking the Jack Daniels, and you didn't really say that person could drink it?
It's a violation by the other person, because if you know it's BYOB, if that person didn't say you can have some of their Jack Daniels or whatever else they chose to bring, then you are not to touch it. It's BYOB. You know you didn't bring that bottle of Jack Daniels. You say, hey, whose bottle of Jack Daniels is it? Can I have some? If that person didn't say yes,
then you can have some.
Yeah. But if that person says no, put my damn bottle down, then you put the bottle down.
Yeah, I don't think it's that difficult. When I first heard about the alleged incident, I did not know that it was BYOB. This person brought the bottle of Jack Daniels and then proceeded to tell people not to drink it. And I was like, well, how do you bring a bottle of liquor to a party and then not, you know, share? But if it is explicitly written in the invitation that it is BYOB, then you need to bring your own booze.
But questionable offense, though, if you want to make it BYOB and then you want to hold that bottle for yourself, you probably shouldn't have it in the common area either.
Also a fair point.
Yeah, you got a point there.
So
is there a collective area and then like the personal private areas too?
It's a bar area with different bottles. So different bottles of things. So you don't know what's on limits and what's off limits. So it's just like, you know, you got to... Gotta specify.
Yeah, that's a tough one right there.
I agree. That's some gray area with the BYOB. Also, if you go to the party and show up intentionally without any booze, are you allowed to then drink booze?
I think you got to ask.
If you ask, if somebody gives them to you, it's fine. Yeah.
Or somebody offer you some.
Yeah, sure.
Ha,
totally,
there we go.
Totally agree.
So, yeah.
But you should show to probably try to bring something if you're showing up to a party.
Just show up with an empty bottle.
What if you show up after, like, work or something?
How about a red Solo? Just show up with a cup.
an empty cup.
Fill me up, boys.
Spare Jack Daniels, please. Can I have your Jack Daniels, sir? Please.
Or Tito's.
I think you just got to read
Tito's.
There's just an element of sharing that. It's also an element of reading the room. How well do you know the people? Like, if you know these people really well, if I'm going to a party where I know somebody really well, I don't worry as much about showing up with something or not showing up with something, or do they, like... trying to provide for my guests. If I know them really well, I don't care as much. Like,
Nick,
if my
you letting somebody
up,
touch your
care.
Tito's, man?
What's that?
You letting somebody touch your Tito's on a BYOB?
See, it's kind of... You kind of need to be the nice guy when you're hosting.
I mean, if I'm bringing the big jug, you can have some. Okay. If it's like a, you know, more standard-sized bottle...
Yeah.
We're gonna throw it down.
Could you imagine though someone at Nick's house get a bottle of Tito's and then goes in his refrigerator and get a bottle of cranberry juice and pour it himself? He's like, "You want one? You good?"
Or start passing out to everybody else.
He throws a Donovan McNabb bobblehead right at you.
Exactly.
Across the room. But it also depends on the quality too. If you show up with like a really, really nice bottle of liquor and it's BYOB, then you better keep your hands off my liquor. If I show up with a fairly generic base model of booze because I've purchased the cheap version for your party, I'm probably okay with people drinking it.
Could it be as simple as that person putting it in a public spot? Like, if you keep it close to you, like on the coffee table, like while you're, like, then people know not to touch your stuff.
By your feet on the couch.
But once you put it in the common area, then it becomes fair game.
All bets are off,
But if someone's walking around with a big bottle of Jack Daniels around a party, that looks kind of weird.
Right.
I'm just like, why is this guy walking around? And then if you have it in between your left feet and your right feet, in the middle,
the
you're squeezing it together.
Well, at least people know not to touch it then.
Yeah, no question.
Look, you point at your feet. Can I get some of that?
There's no gray area when a guy's got a bottle of liquor
between
his feet.
Can I get some of that? Nah, you can't. That's
you can't even ask at that point. If it's at his feet, then it's off limits for everybody.
Yeah. Or if it's under his left armpit or something. I don't know.
I'm so glad not to be single.
Oh, man. Fellas, another reboot, but this time a classic sports movie. The Mighty Ducks is getting a reboot on this new Disney Plus app that's dropping next week.
Is that going to star Ryan Porth? Him and Jason McCabe as the Bash Brothers?
That'd be great.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. But so basically
Darren
here.
As the coach. So
D-Mac is Gordon Bombay.
Yeah.
God.
But here's the plot line for it. So the series will focus on a 13-year-old boy who gets kicked off the Mighty Ducks until his mom decides to start their own team, find players, a coach, and a place to play. And this will begin production in February in Vancouver.
So he's kicked off the Mighty Ducks?
So it's not the Mighty Ducks.
That's not even
a reboot
then. That's a spinoff.
Exactly.
That's 100% a spinoff. Definitely not a reboot. That's dumb.
Any original members of the first two or three movies in this?
It hasn't been confirmed on like a cast just yet. So it's going to get in production in February. So obviously, you know, throughout the weeks, the cast will, you know, be announced then. But I'm going to ask you guys this. If you guys were to reboot a sports movie, What sports movie would that be? Because I'm not a big fan of the new space. Like, I like Space Jam, but I wanted that movie to go untouched. Like, I don't like LeBron James playing in the Space Jam.
You can only reboot a fictional movie, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you can't reboot a true story.
Yeah, and he's doing it because China. Yeah. Let's just be honest about it. You know what sells really big in China? Space Jam.
Let's reboot. I don't know.
Here's one for you guys.
I don't want to touch the good ones.
Here's
one
for you guys. White Man Can't Jump.
Why would you? No, see, it's so great.
But they were going to reboot it.
It's going to fail. But it's
not going to be as good as the original.
It can't possibly be better.
Caddyshack, you know, Field of Dreams. Like, none of these movies could be better. Now, Any Given Sunday could be better. I think Any Given Sunday kind of sucked. I think you could take Any Given Sunday and make it far better. But that's
I'm trying to think of a sports movie that was based around college that you can remake, not like
the program. The program is awesome. But again, why would you want to, like, why mess with something that was great?
Because I would just love to see players just, you know, actors enter the transfer portal.
Blue chip.
And all this.
Blue chip would be a good one.
But it's sort of, again, it's also almost perfect because it's so silly.
Yeah.
You could do Blue Chip with Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
That's true.
that would be a good movie. Joel Embiid
anything with Joel Embiid.
Of Blue Chip.
Yeah. Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons.
Who plays Nick Nolte?
Oh, man.
Like Zach Galifianakis? somebody stupid.
Nick Nolte. Nick Nolte played Nick Nolte.
It's got to be funny, though. You kind of, like, Blue Chips is sort of meant to make fun of it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I love the program. I don't know about you guys.
I've never seen it.
Omar Epps and Halle Berry. Holy smokes.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
You've never seen the program? Oh, my God.
I haven't.
It is based, I believe it's based off of some of those Florida State teams in the early 90s. It is fantastic. You've seen it, Nick, right?
Yep.
Like a thousand times probably.
Very, oh, yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I want to see a biopic on the U, like Miami and those playing days. I would love to see a movie on that.
Just book Michael Irvin on the show. He'll tell you all about it.
I'd rather go to like the Frank Martin, Ed Orgeron bar fighting part of this. Like where these guys were like, Frank Martin was a bouncer in Miami and Ed Orgeron was like getting in bar fights as one of the coaching staff members, you know, on the coaching staff. Like I'd almost like a 30 for 30 on the coaches because they were out getting in bar fights. The coaching, like Barry Switzer's staff did that too at Oklahoma. They would get in bar fights with each other. I mean, can you imagine that story coming out today?
Brutal.
Jeremy Pruitt, and it took his staff to a restaurant on the Cumberland.
Hey, weekend
Tennessee
with
River.
Mike Price coming to a theater near you.
But where was Pruitt seen last week with Gus's?
Yeah, Gus is good time. Yeah, Gus is good time, man. No doubt about that.
All right, coming up next, author Andrew Marinus will join the show, as well as Hal Gill at 9:30. Stay there. It's Morning Drive.